Hello everyone, this is the next episode of SummerPod, the Donkey Drum, with Cheria Maria Marella from Bali, Indonesia. A media personality worked for MTV, CNN, Channel News Asia, Gojek. We will have this interview in English with subtitles. Now let me switch to Hungarian for a bit. Üdvözlök mindenkit, ez itt a SummerPod, a mai vendég Cheria Maria Marella, Radio DJ, televíziós műsorvezető, média személyiség, Indonéziából, Baliból. Angol és magyar nyelvű feliratot készítettünk ezt az adáshoz, amit a lejátszón az alul lévő CC feliratú gombbal lehet kibekapcsolni, illetve nyelvek között váltani. Hi Cheria.
Hi Carl, how are you?
Indonesia consists of more than 17,000 islands. Including yes. Sumatra, Java, Sulawesi, and parts of Borneo and New Guinea. Indonesia True. Is the world's largest island country and the 17th largest country by land area with more than 270 million people. And one of the 17,000 islands is Bali, and you are from Bali too. Bali is Indonesia's main tourist destination since the 80s. What do you think, why Bali became the most important tourist attraction in Indonesia?
Well, I think first of all, Bali just don't care. If that can explain everything. What I mean by that is that all the parts of Indonesia, all the other islands, are pretty much very conservative when it comes to religion, right? It's either they're Muslim or Christians, Catholic and all that, but mostly Islamic islands, the other part of Indonesia, except for Bali, which is Hindu based. And I think the people in Bali is way more relaxed because basically they are welcoming everyone with open arms. And they also have pretty beautiful, you know, beaches, mountains, areas, even the jungle and the forest that you know you can explore in Bali. And I think that's why people love to be here. And there's just no judgment. When you're here, then you're here to enjoy all your experiences, right? Nobody's going to, you know, judge you for what you wear. Nobody's going to judge you for doing what you want to do. But of course, it has to be, it has to go both ways where the tourist as well has to respect our culture here in Bali. But yeah, I think that's why people like it.
The tourism related business makes up 80% of its economy and generates revenue.
Yes.
But it comes with a high price too. I saw a documentary recently how big toll the COVID pandemic made on the Balinese economy, and tourism decreased recently. The same time, it raised an opportunity for the local people and environment to catch up a little bit, and civilian with the government organizing campaign to clean up the island and its shores of the accumulated plastic waste. And the images I saw was just wow, the amount of garbage the people were collecting. How do you see, is there a chance that once traveling will be possible again, the quality and the quantity of the tourism will be regulated and rationalized, so its environmental impact could be moderated in the future?
That is exactly what we are hoping for in Bali. Like once the border, international border is open, we are hoping that the government will have stricter regulation to who can stay here, what they're doing, what impact. If they're staying here for a longer period of time, then they're gonna have to contribute something to the island so that it doesn't, you know what I mean? So but again, I think it's not just the tourism that causes the garbage, like you said. It is also because here in Bali, actually, we are the first area in Indonesia who banned plastic bags, and we are already doing it. But you can tell, even though we banned it, still not really decrease the amount of garbage, the other types of garbage that are being thrown to the waterways or everywhere. And I think the main issue here is actually education, and it's very systematic. It has to go from above to the ground, not the other way around, because all we can do as people who live in Bali, we try our best, right, to collaborate with other instances to clean up the beach, to clean up waterways, the rivers, to clean up everything. But then if the government never actually really educated the people that you cannot throw garbage everywhere as you wish, but there's already a bin and you have to throw it over there, and then they should have like this whole recycle thing going on. Otherwise, then you're just gonna throw the garbage, you're gonna pick it up, and they're gonna put it to like a huge place where they throw all the garbage, and then what? And then it's just gonna sit there forever and ever, and it's gonna smell. And that's what's been going on with Indonesia, I think. That's the government doesn't have like a proper regulation of what they are going to do with the garbage here. And that's the main issue. And secondly, they do not educate people that you cannot throw garbage anywhere. And I don't think it only happens in Bali. I think it happens all over Indonesia. And Bali is not the worst. I don't think Bali is the worst when it comes to garbage. If you go to Jakarta, that's even worse.
So is it mostly organized by civil organizations, yeah, or movements?
Mostly, okay. And private, yeah.
And you try to force the government to do some steps in this direction as well, or it's not really happening?
There's nothing from the government yet that is tangible for us to see that there is a difference when it comes to trash and garbage all over Indonesia, right? So there are private instances now, or private organizations now, that are taking care of it, but it's private, so it's gonna be costly as well, and not everyone can probably afford to, you know, to give them your garbage for them to recycle it, reuse it, and all that stuff. And it is still a problem, but I think Jakarta and Bali already have that. The private instances who are doing that, who are trying to be the solution when it comes to garbage. But yeah, we're still waiting for the government itself to do something about it.
Mm-hmm. That's great to hear it. But I also saw that on your Facebook page that you were actively contributing to it, these programs, and you were also working on this, like voluntarily. I saw some.
Yeah, I volunteered twice to this organization called Sungai Watch, and it's founded by Gary Bentegip, which is, he's French, was born in Bali, born and raised, I think, in Bali. And then he's only 26, but he's already, you know, made a huge impact and difference when it comes to cleaning up. So what they do is to clean up the river, and then he collaborate with other instances how to reuse it, recycle it, and all that. And I thought that if I didn't go to the field myself, I wouldn't know how big of a problem this is, right? So I decided, okay, let's go there, let's see how it is. And then I realized that it is really, really bad.
Indonesia is the world's fourth most populous country, and the most populous Muslim majority country. However, almost 11% of the Indonesians are Christians, while the rest are Hindus, Buddhists, and others. I saw a great documentary from you, or with you, on the Channel News Asia. It's called Deciphering Indonesia, in which you travel to Aceh. Aceh, is this the correct pronunciation?
Yes, Aceh.
Which is the most west part of Indonesia and have a higher degree of autonomy from a central government. And as a conservative Islam territory, Aceh has the right to create some aspect of an independent legal system implementing Sharia law, for example.
Yes.
You are trying to display how Sharia police works in the everyday, and you were following a female Sharia squad for a day, visited a caning exercise, and so on. How do you see why the conservative Islam ideology became more popular in most part of the Indonesia and Southeast Asia? Is it serves only political interest of the Islamic parties, or it's a righteous answer and need from the people as a solution to the challenges of globalization and European and American cultural influences? Why do we experience this trend now? What do you think?
To be very honest with you, but I think people are going to hate me if I answer it this way, so I'm going to have a few other answers as well.
Mm-hmm.
From the Aceh people itself, when I ask them why suddenly you guys changed or shifted into the Sharia law and everything, they honestly believe that when the tsunami hits, I think it was in 2006 when the tsunami hit.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually punishment from God to why they are not really practicing Islam the way God wanted them to do. And so because of that, they shifted into more religious into more religious beliefs in that particular area who got hit by the tsunami as a means to repent, I would say. That's the first answer. And the second answer to me, what anything that has everything to do with religion in the whole world, not just Indonesia, the whole world, is we're talking about control, government control. Because it's easier, especially probably in the third world country, it's easier to lead people by inflicting fear. Because maybe most of the people here are probably less educated. And so it's easier for them to just steer everyone with fear, right? Fear of hell. So if you're afraid of going to hell in your afterlife, here's what you need to do. And they give you all the rules and everything, and people are blindly following it without realizing that it's actually who made that rules, that your own government made the rules, and then to do what? To just control everyone. That's actually my belief, at least, when it comes to religion, because that's also what I see in Indonesia. Most of the religions is steered by political person behind it anyway. So yeah, it's to gain followers, it's to gain more power, it's to gain more money economically. You know, it's easier if you are labeled as a religious person. But that's my take on it. I could be wrong.
Do you think there is a difference in this, if you compare the 60s, 70s, and 80s, like the post-Second World War period?
We don't even need to go back that far. I think going back to even the 80s or the 90s, where we had our second president in charge, the former president Suharto, it was not like this. Indonesia was not like this. I would say people are more open back then, but yeah, you are right. Things are shifted, and I think it is controlled by political issues, economical issues, and the need for power and the need to be known either personally or, you know, or if you have any party behind you.
Mm-hmm. And do you think it has a role in the mass communication and the mobile telephony as well in if any, like what I mean, like they can reach more people with the ideology and the yeah the political messages now than before.
Oh yes, totally. There are now websites, Indonesian jihadi websites and stuff like that, who recruits their recruitees online. It's mm-hmm. you can just Google it and you can find it. And mm-hmm. and I don't know if you have read it before, but just yesterday we had another terrorist attack, female terrorist attack. She went to the police, where was it? Mabes Polri is actually like the headquarter of police in Jakarta. She actually went there with a gun and start shooting, but then aiming to nothing, so she didn't hit anyone, but then the police shot her. She died, and it was viral literally yesterday. And then a week ago, there was another bombing in a cathedral in Makassar, which is in, Makassar is in Sulawesi, right? Yeah, oh, I think so. But yeah, so that just happened. So I guess, yeah, it's the wanting to be known or be seen or be saved by the higher powers they believe. It's just radical ideology that we need to fight, I think, in Indonesia.
You've been working in big media outlets. Did you ever face any discrimination because your gender at your work?
I've never, personally, never felt any discrimination whatsoever mm. in my line of work. I think, on the contrary, Indonesian female reporters, anchors, media personality, I would just say, in Indonesia, the number is actually rising now, to women who are actually on top position in media as well, like the editor-in-chiefs and, you know, all that. I think it's actually rising, so there's no problem when it comes to being female working in this industry in Indonesia, I would say, but I cannot say, I don't know about the other industry, I would say, but mm-hmm. I think at least for my industry, I know there's no problem there.
I traveled Borneo and Bali, where I found this amazing natural parks and diving centers. But when I lived in Kuala Lumpur, I had a chance to experience the extensive haze caused by large-scale illegal deforestation. And expansion of the palm oil industry is the primary factor behind much of Indonesia's deforestation. While it can generate a wealth for local communities, it may degrade the ecosystems and cause social problems as well. What is happening on the government level to stop these deforestation and ban the companies are profiting from deforestation? Is this part of the daily political discussion in Indonesia?
I would say so, because I know, again, personally, one of my good friends, he's also helping me with my new media, Good Shot, but he's also working for the government Ministry of Forestry to fight that. So basically he developed all these drones that flies across Kalimantan area, where the most palm oil plantations and all these illegal deforestation happen. And he would take all the data about it, and then he would present it to the government, which one is legal, which one is illegal. And when they found out it's illegal, they would shut it down. So that's what I know is happening. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I don't know. That's what I know that's happening.
Do you know if there is any international program to compensate the people and companies who needs those jobs and that wage to survive. So they stopped doing and supporting these activities. So anything from the international, I don't know. That's a very unfortunate, because I was thinking like, so many people had this, this is a, an income, and many people has, this is as the only income available in rural areas. So I think as this is not just Indonesia's problem, but the whole region, and actually it's a global problem, I was thinking it should, the global community and some organizations should have start a program for compensating these people and educate them, as you, or as you already mentioned, and actually to move this to put this on the track, this for to have a solution, or at least like a partial solution on that.
Hopefully after this interview, maybe there will be a global organization who sees it and wants to do something about it and can help.
Yeah.
I think that would be really, really good.
The recent years in Europe, but also in the United States, the freedom of speech was really in focus because of also the social media outlets you can use or everybody can use to publish their opinions. So government seems to would like to control this, what can be published on, like, for example, on Facebook or Twitter and so on. And they would like to force these outlets to follow some kind of regulations and guidelines. How is it going in Indonesia or Southeast Asia regarding this topic? Like, do you exercise a full freedom of speech now, or you have some regulations you need to follow, or you just follow your own guidelines when you talk about some topics?
Actually, we do have a law and regulations when it comes to that, especially if it's in an online realm, right? So there's a law number 11 of 2008 on electronic information and transaction, or we call it UUIPE, or ITE. It is the legal instrument regulating all aspects of information technology and communications in Indonesia. Mm. So basically it's focusing on criminalization of material acts. So if you, let's say you talk nasty about precedent on your Instagram account or on your Facebook account, you can be charged. Or if you bully anyone on your social media account and then they reported it, you can also get this, the punishment. I think it's jail time, but I can't remember it. I think it's around 8 months to 5 years, depending. I can't really remember, but yeah, around that, the punishment would be jail time. And so there are regulations about it, although it's still pretty much controversial. But we're getting there, and I think it's good, because I love freedom of speech, but at the same time, if there is no regulation, then people can just bully people or bully others or even bully the president or, you know, all the important people that are doing great jobs in Indonesia just because of that, you know, hiding behind, oh, it's my freedom of speech. Yeah, but you still need to have rules and regulations. So thankfully we have that. So if there's any Indonesian people feeling like you are being bullied online, you can definitely report it and make a case about it.
What do you think, which are the most important issues in your region, what you need to target in the near future to make it a more advanced and competitive country? And what would you focus on if you would be in politics?
I think the first one would be education, because all the problems that we have in Indonesia, I think mostly it's because people don't have enough education in their lives. So it's very easy for them to be brainwashed by organizations or parties or anything who probably, you know, who probably told them, okay, just follow this, and then you'll have a lot of money. But then it turns out to be a terrorist organization or something, or follow this religion rules, blah, 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 because there's going to be heaven and blah, blah, blah. But then you have to kill other people, let's say, the radical brainwash. If you are educated enough, I think you have your own system in your head, boundaries in your head, that you can filter all the information, because information comes from everywhere right now. All these online technology, you can get information in a second. If you cannot filter it, then it's very easy for you to be used by manipulative organizations or whatsoever, right? To steer you to do whatever that they wanted. That's first. And then second, I think it has to be systematic as well. I think the government needs to also fix themselves. They need to be the one that we can see having integrity, because sometimes I feel like the Indonesian people have lost the trust to the government. It could be whoever who's in charge in whichever area of Indonesia. I think they need to be able to show integrity, like no bribing, or if they promise that they're going to deliver something when they got elected, let's say, they would actually do it instead of just promising. And I think that also needs to be fixed. So education, integrity, and I think the third thing I would say, tolerance, because we are a country that is so ruled by religions, right? And I'm saying it to all the five religions in Indonesia. We are so used to be ruled by the religions. Sometimes we think that we are the only one who's right. Like my religion is the best one and I'm the one who's right. And then you became judgmental towards other people with different beliefs. And that happens a lot. And that is why there are terrorists walking around this country. It's because they believe what they're doing is the right thing to do. And that kind of justify them to murder other people in a different belief system. And I think de-radicalization, I would say, or again, education about tolerance needs to be more intensely be put maybe in curriculums in schools or something, so that people won't get easily brainwashed by a radical group of people. And I'm not saying this is only for one particular religion, but every religion should have tolerance in their hearts to be able to love each other and to be able to live together with you know, other people with different beliefs, instead of like, I'm right, you're wrong. I'm right, you're dead. You know, that kind of thing needs to end. It needs to end.
You look very positive and so optimistic. I really envy on this now. In Europe, it's like everyone is so, it will be not in the interview. I don't think so. So in Europe, everybody is so depressed now. It seems like in Southeast Asia, you don't really have a huge impact on your life, or you got used to these kind of things, like you have a pandemic going on.
Oh my God, Bali was impacted really bad, COVID-19. Starting March 2020, when we closed down everything, there's so many people suffering in Bali because of that, right? All the hotels, most of the F&B businesses are closed down. So many people lost their jobs. And even for me, I was afraid for a while. I think when it comes about 6 months on, you know, of lockdown and all that last year, I was quite scared. I was anxious. I was thinking, you know, I don't know how long it's going to be. I don't know whether or not, you know, my savings, how long it's going to last. And, you know, but then after a while, I can just soothe myself and be grateful for whatever I'm having right now. Because if I'm focusing on the fear, if I'm focusing on the lack, or I'm focusing too much in the future that is not happening yet, I'm wasting my time being scared instead of doing things I needed to do and get done, like right now. Because when I come back and focus on today, right now, I'm still alive. I still have a home. I still have a job. That is something I need to really be grateful about. And I think that would keeps me going. And I know there are people that are not as fortunate as me. I'm just hoping things will also get better for them. But yeah, the impact hits pretty hard.
Thank you very much. I'm appreciated for your time and your answers. I would like to ask everyone to subscribe to the channel. We continue to upload content to this English playlist as well. Thank you, Cheryl, again.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.